The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
In a recent list published to ESPN.com, our reporters ranked their top 25 players under 25 based on future potential. No surprise, Luka and Zion at 1 and 2. But Hornets rookie LaMelo Ball came in at 3 on the list, ahead of notable stars like Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Devin Booker, De'Aaron Fox, and Jamal Murray, just to name a few. Stephen A. Smith, does LaMelo belong in the top 3 of this list?
Hell no. And I love LaMelo, and he would have been my rookie of the year had he not gotten hurt. I think this kid is a future star in this league. I love LaMelo Ball. But see, this is stuff like this that diminishes the credibility of ESPN, okay? This is the list. This is our list, right? Am I correct about this? I believe it's our list. Yes, it is. Let me tell you something right now.
Yes, ESPN.com.
What the hell? I mean, ESPN needs to drug test anybody that has something to do with this list. Makes no sense. Devin Booker is not – LaMelo Ball before Devin Booker? Really? LaMelo Ball before Donovan Mitchell? Really? LaMelo Ball before Jason Tatum? Really? I mean, what the hell is going on? Okay? I believe that ESPN should call security right now and go to whoever put this list together on ESPN.com. Summon all, line them up and test every one of them. Every one of them.
Somebody's
out of it. Somebody's out of it. You got to be kidding me. This don't make any sense right here. I just gave you a little thing. Now, we could go down the list. We could go down the list with a few guys. But I'm just saying, I just gave you three. Ben Simmons, I understand the brother doesn't shoot the ball. But what else doesn't he do? Have you seen this man play defense? Ben Simmons is a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. Ben Simmons is 6'10", can handle the rock, can pass, has a very, very high basketball IQ, can finish at the basket, is incredibly athletic, can run the show. I mean, what are we talking about here? What are we talking about? So I'm just saying top three. LaMelo Ball can play. I believe in this kid. Happy for Michael Jordan and the Charlotte Hornets for drafting him. I believe in him. I believe this dude is going to be an all-star sooner than later, a perennial all-star. The kid's got swag. He's got game. He was my rookie of the year before he got hurt. I get all of that. But to sit up there and put him number 3 ahead of Donovan Mitchell, ahead of Devin Booker, ahead of Jason Tatum, just to name it, ahead of Ben Simmons. I mean, come on. People need to get tested. I work for ESPN, all right? I've been here for the better part of the last 17, 18 years. I have nothing to do with this list. Nothing. Nothing. I disassociate myself from these people. Whoever the hell put that list together. Whoever, that has nothing to do with me. Go ahead, Max.
Put together a hell of a list. Very good list. Excellent list. I don't agree with it exactly. I probably also would have Devin Booker 3rd or 4th, along with Donovan Mitchell. But Stephen A., at the very top of the article, it explicitly states that this is about future value. This is about value going forward. So here's the big difference between LaMelo and, let's start with what LaMelo can do. He's a potential future MVP. He can do it all. Now, when you look at the list, Luka Doncic and Ben Simmons are the only passers on LaMelo's level on the entire list. Unlike, however, Ben Simmons, LaMelo can shoot it. Meaning he and Luka are kind of in a category by themselves in terms of the genius level passers who can also hit shots from the outside. But here's where LaMelo really differentiates himself, separates himself. He's like 5 years younger than the other guys we're talking about. Donovan Mitchell's 24. Devin Booker's 24. Ben Simmons is 24. I'm with you. Right now, obviously, they're better. They're 5 years older than him. His future value in the next 5 years. And by the way, these dudes weren't as good as LaMelo at 19. In fact, very few players who have ever lived have been as good as LaMelo at the age of 19. And then you ask yourself, can you build a team around him that could maybe win a championship? Does he look like that kind of player? Yup. Does he have swagger, confidence, right? Is he the kind of guy, you know, a team will follow? Yup. Can you see him winning an MVP in the future? Yup. Check, check, check. And in terms of an offensive player, what weakness does he really even have? No, he's not 6'10 like Ben Simmons. He's 6'6". He's a genius-level passer who's 6'6", balling at the age of 19 as few ever has, and he can hit shots from the outside? No. Would I have him three? I'm with, especially Devin Booker. I don't see LaMelo putting up, you know, like, show me where you can score 60 points in a game, right? Because Devin Booker can do that. Show me where
actually,
you can dominate a playoff
70.
Game like
actually,
Donovan Mitchell.
He scored
yeah,
70
right.
in a game against Boston.
Devin Booker is like, it's indecent what he can do. But I'm just saying, he hasn't proven that yet. He hasn't shown he can dominate in the playoffs like Donovan Mitchell. So I'm with you there. I probably have him like fifth. But I could see why he's top three based on his age alone.
Max Kellerman, I hear where you're coming from. And originally, upon seeing the list, it's like 25 and under. Okay, their game, where you'd rank him, et cetera, et cetera. I get your point, you know, upon reading it, where you're talking about future potential. But I still maintain my position, Max Kellerman. Because let me tell you something right now. Let's go further in the list. How do we not have Devin Booker in the top five?
I don't know.
How do we not have him in the top?
He's getting better and better.
Have you heard anyone on the air rave about De'Aaron Fox more than me? De'Aaron Fox is in Sacramento. Almost no one raves about him but me, because I saw him give it to Lonzo in the NCAA tournament, and I religiously bring up how that's the lone argument, legitimate argument, Magic Johnson and I have ever had, because I was like, don't draft Lonzo, draft De'Aaron Fox. That's the dude you want. I love De'Aaron Fox. He's at six. He's ahead of Devin Booker, too. I mean, come on, man. You just look at certain things and you're like, Chill. What are y'all talking about? What are y'all talking about? So it's not just about LaMelo. It's several things that are questionable on this list. All right, and I'm only playing. They know I'm only playing when I'm talking about them getting drug tested and all of that stuff. That's just a figure of speech. I'm just messing with those guys. They do a great job. But damn it, I'm still disassociating myself from this list. No. LaMelo had a rookie year. He was a rookie year for the ages. He was putting on a show. We get all of that. We understand it. We see the potential. But let's be honest. As good as he is, and as good as we believe and probably know he's going to be, some of it is assisted by the fact that he wasn't his brother. Because when Lonzo first came into the league, he was so passive. He's getting better now and more assertive. Mm-hmm. But he was so passive. He seemed hell-bent on dribbling the ball past half court and passing it to somebody else and go hiding in the corner. That ain't LaMelo. So part of that is the fact that you're not like your brother. But Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, come on, man.
Donovan Mitchell's already done it in the playoffs. Donovan Mitchell had an all-time great playoff performance already. But Devin Booker's being disrespected here, straight up disrespected. I wondered for a while early on, is he an empty calorie type of stat dude, right? Like, I can see he can score, but can he do it in the service of winning? He did it for a team that went 8-0 in the bubble, that's balling now. And Stephen A., we like to compare people to Kobe Bryant a lot in the league. Mamba mentality. I'm not talking about the Mamba mentality, but I am talking about his overall offensive game. Like a dude who can do anything offensively to score the ball, I look at Devin Booker. At eight, that's a ridiculous ranking of Devin Booker. I'm with you there 100%.
No question. And obviously, LaMelo's out indefinitely with the wrist injury. I just have to say this really quick because I got kind of sad. Stephen A., when you were saying, like, we need security, the whole thing, it was reminding me of the time you had the Cowboys fan removed by the police. I got kind of sad. You know, just thinking about our road shows, the big crowds.
I wasn't sad about that.
That was so much fun. I missed that. I hope we get to do that again
in
the near future. But that really happened.
Stephen
A. removed them again.
They do a great job on the website.
Out of the building with police. That really happened. Yes, it did. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. To baseball we go, fellas. During the sixth inning of Monday's Angels-Astros game, an inflatable garbage was heaved over the right field scoreboard, and later a real garbage can landing in almost the exact place, interrupting play more than once. Astros manager Dusty Baker saying after the game, essentially, when is this all going to end? It's been apparent for some time now that baseball fans are still angry over the Astros cheating scandal. Max, do you think it's time to get over the Astros scandal?
Absolutely not, and that's not for Dusty Baker or anyone wearing an Astros uniform to decide. You know, the fans will tell you when they're over it, and I suspect it won't be for a while. Now, you can't be throwing garbage cans on the field. You should not. Any fan that throws something on the field that could injure a player, that's a criminal act. An inflatable garbage can's kind of funny. I mean, you know, they're saying this is your trash. I get it. It's an inflatable thing. It's not going to hurt anybody. But like a real garbage can or anything that's hard that could hurt someone, no, no, no. Get out of there with that. That crosses the line, obviously. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about booing and calling them garbage and stuff like that. That's all within bounds. Like, that's what fans are meant. Stephen A. Molly, I'm a Yankees fan, a big Yankees fan. I thought they had a good chance to win in 2017. And what I noticed now in retrospect, the Astros beat them 2-1 in Houston. 2-1 in Houston. Yanks beat the brakes off them in the Bronx. 5-0, 8-2, whatever it was. Then they go back to Houston and they lose in 7. So in other words, like the Astros couldn't beat them at Yankee Stadium. I thought, well, the Yankees can't win on the road. No, you can't win in Houston because they're stealing signs. They know what's coming. And Altuve seemed to especially know what's coming. Like, you know, so I'm not the only fan of a team that feels cheated by the Astros. You absolutely can't do anything dangerous, none of that. But booing, no one in an Astros uniform should even say anything other than, yeah, the fans are going to react how they're going to react. We're going to have to take it. The least you can do when you cheated your way to a World Series and cheated other teams out of their rightful chance to win, the least you can do is shut up when the fans boo you and take it.
Absolutely. I know it's a debate show, but we completely agree, and it's very few. Listen, I've known Dusty Baker a little for years, and I love the man, and I love the fact that he's back managing in baseball because that's where he belongs. He's one of the best managers, as far as I'm concerned, the game has ever seen. Dusty Baker is a fabulous manager, knows the game of baseball inside and out. He wasn't a part
of the cheating scandal where they were stealing signs and all of this other stuff, using garbage cans to signal one another or what have you. But the bottom line is that it happened. And because it happened, Dusty Baker can't be old school in this situation, even though he's obviously an old school individual. He's got to suck it up and deal with it because that's the team he inherited. You have personnel on your franchise that won a World Series, that was on the verge of winning two World Series in 3 years. Altuve, Correa, Springer, and all of these boys. We know they can play. We know they're big time. That's what makes their actions even that much more egregious, the fact that they were they in some way, shape, form, or fashion participated in the sign and benefiting from the sign stealing. They certainly didn't need to do so. And so when we look at it from that perspective, the fact that all of those things happened, a manager lost his job, a general manager lost his job. You know, listen, I think that, you know, guys getting hit by baseballs, it's a bit too dangerous. I know it comes with the game, but damn it, that stuff hurts. But when you talk about the fans, again, the inflated garbage cans and stuff like that, if that's the case, as long as nobody is going to endure any physical harm, I have no problem whatsoever with the scrutiny, the shrapnel of criticism that's going to be aimed in their direction. Remember, last year there was COVID. And because there was COVID last year, guys, you know, the fans were not at the games. And because they weren't at the games, the Astros got away. They, you know, got a mulligan per se. They didn't have to deal, you know, with this criticism that was going to be rained down upon them. So guess what? It happens this year, Dusty Baker. It happens this year, Houston Astros. No one has forgotten what y'all did. A lot of people out there still think your title was illegitimate, that your run to the World Series was illegitimate. And so that's the way it goes. Suck it up and deal with it. That's what happens when you cheat.
Yeah. The garbage cans are one thing, like using a signal. The issue for the Astros is they had a system with cameras and technology at their home park that was like stealing signs is part of baseball. But you can't like if you're looking into the catcher, what he's doing, but you can't rig it so that there's nothing the other team can do. If you rig it with technology so there's nothing that crosses a line and they're hearing about it.
Yeah, you reap what you sow. Take out the tiny violin. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
So much for a perfect season, Dickie V, who is on the call for ESPN International. Good to see you, sir. Unbelievable by the Bears, putting the beat down on the Zags. None of us really expecting it. I know you think there's a lot of excuses. I'll let you give us those. But overall, do you think the Zags were overrated?
No, absolutely not overrated. They had a great year. They had a game. They ran into a good basketball team. Team played super. That's the beauty of college basketball, one-time shot. They had a fantastic year. You go 31-0, it's special. You know, some people are out there saying, well, they were exhausted from Saturday night. Well, look, if you're going to be a national championship team, you got to get it done. I'll tell you, 2019, Virginia had to beat Auburn by one. Then they came back and won the national title in overtime. So the bottom line is they got it done. 2017, North Carolina had an incredible game, beats Oregon by one. They come back and they win. National championship teams regroup. And I'll tell you one thing I'm proud of. Mark Few and his kids just tipped the hat and saluted the unbelievable performance by Baylor and made no excuses that we were exhausted from Saturday against UCLA. Winners don't make excuses.
Dickie V, the season felt like it was the Gonzaga story, but I want to tell a different story for a second. A Baylor team who a year ago maybe would have won the national title had there been a tournament, who was waiting all this time, who, because of all the cancellations and postponements, like maybe that's why they didn't go undefeated. And when they get to the tournament, Dickie V, they get to the Final Four and whoop up on a Houston team, a good Houston team, and then beat Gonzaga like that. I mean, have you, in your years watching college basketball, where does this Baylor team, because to me in retrospect, this is the story of Baylor against this COVID backdrop. Where does this Baylor team rank among the great college teams you've ever seen?
Well, you know, Max, first of all, you made a great, great point. We said it during our telecast last night. Had there not been COVID-19 problems where they took like a 2.5, 3-week pause and they were 17-0 playing brilliant then, they might have come into that game. They lost two games after they came back. They might have come into that game undefeated. I mean, right there, nip and tuck in terms of people talking about them and Gonzaga. Look, this was a terrific basketball team who was so efficient. They showed in this tournament their ability. They had multiple weapons and shooting the threes, whether it be Butler, Mitchell, whether it be Teague or Flagler off the bench, and their bench was certainly a major factor. I mean, you think about Chamwa Achiuwa coming in, giving some time inside, physical presence against Timmy on a post. I mean, they defended well. And then the one thing we talked about yesterday is that what's concerning me, when I saw UCLA put 90 on the board against them, I knew that they're going to get shots. Remember, we talked about how if they don't play better defense, and they give shots available to this club, this club will make shots in terms of Baylor. And that's what happened. But 86, that's one of the high-scoring games in a championship game in quite a while. So the bottom line is they really made good things happen because they moved the ball, they played as a team, they were efficient in every way. And we just got to pay tribute and really not hear about some people talking about, oh, they were exhausted because of the UCLA game. I don't want to hear that, Stephen A. I don't want to hear it. It's really ridiculous. Bottom line is Baylor won wire to wire and dominated that game.
They dominated the game. Nobody wants to hear that. I completely agree with you. But I have to get on the basketball aficionados here because Max and I talked about it at the top of the show with Coach Seth Greenberg. The fact of the matter is Gonzaga, I'm not going to tell you they were overrated, like literally like disrespecting them. But clearly there's a team that should have been ranked number one. When you consider Baylor looking at them on the court, Dickie V, and you've covered more college basketball than anybody on the planet, looking at Baylor, they were bigger, they were stronger, they were faster, they were tougher. And when you look at it from that perspective, that's not something that I saw watching them compared to others because I didn't watch but so many college basketball games this year. But a lot of y'all did. And I'm wondering, when we look at Baylor and you take into account they're part of the Big 12, whereas Gonzaga is in the West Coast Conference, the WCC, with Pepperdine and St. Mary and people like that. Is it not plausible, particularly at this moment in time, to say, yo, there's a whole bunch of people that made a mistake not having Baylor ranked number one in the nation throughout this season? We got a bit caught up in Gonzaga. Isn't it time to say that?
No, not time at all. I disagree with you totally. I'm going to tell you why I disagree with you, my friend. And I love you dearly. I disagree with you because this club was blowing people out. They blew out Kansas. They blew out Virginia. They blew out Iowa. They've dominated people all year, the margin of victory. They're a good basketball team. They ran into a buzzsaw. This club was tremendous. I agree with you about the quickness. I agree with you about the toughness. And that game, it certainly was indicative of it. It was not really a situation where you look at Gonzaga and say, well, they didn't come up and fight. They made one run, they got it to 9, and they got it back up to 16. Baylor is the best team in the country right now, and that's the only thing that counts, Stephen A. They got the trophy. They're on the campus celebrating in an incredible story from when it all started. Scott Drew dreaming, takes a job over that people thought he was crazy. He was out of his mind with the depths of despair of what was going on at that campus. And here he is, he stands tall, and I salute that. But I also pay tribute to Mark Few and his kids. 31-1, dominating all year, leading the nation in offense in every category. And the bottom line is they just didn't defend well enough in the Final Four. Even the UCLA game, they put 90 on the board. I mean, that was an eye-opener to me because I knew one thing. You know what, Stephen A., Max and Molly? Most teams that are athletic and quick and play good defense like Baylor, they usually don't shoot the ball that well from the perimeter. Well, this team had a combination. They had toughness defensively, and they got 4 weapons that all can make threes, and they do it on a regular basis.
Yeah,
they weren't the same team after the COVID-19, as Max said. But, man, did they come to play in this tournament? They embarrassed, humiliated a very good, very good Houston team, and they also took down a team from wire to wire that many thought people were talking about maybe the best in this era of all time. But I'm telling you, it was absolutely a Baylor show from top to finish.
No question. The Zags are favored by 4.5. All right, Diggy V, why we have you here, I want to get your thoughts on some news, another story in college. So after the retirement of the legend Roy Williams last week, UNC has announced longtime assistant Hubert Davis will be the Tar Heels' new head coach. Davis has been an assistant under Williams for the past 9 seasons and becomes the first black head coach in UNC men's basketball history. Stephen A., you're up first. Thoughts on North Carolina hiring Hubert Davis?
I like it. I like the fact that he's been an assistant there for 9 years. I thought about somebody like Jerry Stackhouse, who's at Vanderbilt with his first job, struggling the first 2 years there. So, but I've got confidence in him because I know he knows the game, and I think that he can turn things around. But Hubert Davis has been on the sidelines for Roy Williams for the last 9 years. Former All-American at Carolina. Played 12 years in the NBA. A matter of fact, I say, you know, the one thing I hold against the winner within, that is Pat Riley, instead of committing yourself to playing John Starks as much as he did, he should have threw Hubert Davis in there to make some shots as well. Might have won a championship. Hubert Davis is somebody that is Carolina. All, you know, just as far as I'm concerned, he's a lifer there. And I love the fact that he's gotten this opportunity. But on a personal level, to see him along with other African-American coaches, you got Boynton at Oklahoma State. You got Patrick Ewing at Georgetown. You got Shaka Smart, even though he departed from Texas, he ended up at Marquette. There's a whole bunch of coaches out there of African-American descent, and you just never want, you always wonder whether or not they're going to get a shot at a big-time program. Obviously, Tubby Smith is at Kentucky, but still, you look at Kentucky, you look at Louisville, you look at Duke, you look at Kansas and stuff like that. To see Hubert Davis land at North Carolina, given an opportunity to showcase what he can bring to the table, I love this opportunity, and I'm proud of North Carolina for making this decision.
I certainly agree with everything that
he used to shoot. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Dickie V.
No, I agree with everything Stephen A. said. I think it's great news. Happen to know Hubert well. We worked with him over at ESPN. This is a super person, man. He is really classy in every way, and he really bleeds the colors of Tar Heel blue. He has such a passion. And, you know, I know you mentioned all those coaches, Stephen A. Don't forget Juwan Howard.
That's right.
I see a correlation, Stephen A., between Hubert Davis and certainly Juwan Howard. NBA experience, played in the NBA, started in the NBA, and basically, you look at Hubert Davis, he loves North Carolina like Juwan loves the maize and blue. And those guys, when you have that passion and you have the knowledge, I talked to Roy Williams yesterday. He raved about Hubert. He raved about him. And that's enough to rave to me because I know I've worked with him. He's a super person as well. You know, they say nice guys finish last, Stephen A., Max, and Molly. Are you kidding me? In the championship game, we had two of the nicest guys you could ever meet in Scott Drew and in Mark Few. Talk to anybody that knows them. Hearts of gold, always extending hands to help people. I tell you, yesterday, Scott Drew's coming down. He sent me a text today. When's the national title? Who does this? Sends me a text. Dickie B, can't wait to be at the gala and introduce you, my man. I mean, that is a classy guy. And the same with Hubert and Juwan and those guys. And I agree with Stephen A. There are a lot of African-American players who have dominated this game, who know this game, and deserve opportunities. And I salute and I tip the hat for North Carolina saying, we got a guy right here. We got a guy right here. He's given his heart and soul to our university. Heart and soul. As a player, 9 years, as Stephen A. said, as an assistant. And you know what? He has earned the right to represent our school.
See, that's why I wanted to go before Dickie V. Boy, you said it all. I think that's exactly on the money. Of course, what else would we expect? When you come from a program, when you have the passion for that program, when you've had success at the next level. I mean, I remember Hubert Davis shooting the ever-loving lights out for the New York Knicks. This dude shot like almost 50% from three. So he had success at the next level. And by the way, Stephen A., not just African-American coaches, but African-American coaches put in positions to succeed at heritage programs. You know, you look at North Carolina, Dean Smith and Roy Williams, and then you hope like, maybe Hubert Davis can be the next guy like that who's there for 20 years and puts together a real legacy, but at one of the heritage big-time programs in college basketball as an African-American coach and former collegiate athlete at that school and then who had success at the next level. What more can you say? It's an exciting hire for North Carolina.
Two quick things I want to mention. Let's not forget that Mike Woodson, former head coach for the New York Knicks, is now the head coach at the University of Indiana, where he played. Let's not forget that. And also, I brought up Lavelle Moten, the coach at University of North Carolina Central in HBCU. Why do I bring up the HBCUs? Because you got a lot of African-Americans coaching in HBCUs who would do a hell of a job on the D1 level at predominantly white institutions. They would do a hell of a job, particularly as it pertains to recruiting. A lot of these programs have them as assistants recruiting. Why not have the faith in them to give them the head job at one of these institutions as well? It's a whole bunch of talent emanating from the African-American community that does not need to be ignored.
Absolutely. Dick Vitale, a pleasure as always, sir. Have a fabulous day. Go eat your pasta. Enjoy yourself. It's been a long season, and we appreciate you.
Loved having you, Dickie V. Love you, my brother.
I love all you guys. I can't thank you enough. It's been, tell you the truth, been one of my highlights this year, being on with you on a regular basis. You people are tremendous, and what I love about you, and I said this to someone very important in television, Stephen A., what I love about you, you could disagree with you, and you never, ever, ever hold grudges. You come out and you fight and you battle what you believe in. And I think that's a great quality to have because there's a lot of guys in the business, if you disagree with them, oh, well, I know more than they know. Are you kidding me? Well, the bottom line is you people, it's a pleasure. It's been an honor to be on with the three of you, and I can't thank you enough. And I'll tell you this, 7 months now, baby, I take life a little easier. I go out and speak. I make some cash because I'm trying to catch Stephen A. I can't catch him. I know. See, he doesn't notice. I know what his bank account has, and I want to catch that bank account.
I wish. Okay.
Dickie V, you're the best. The honor is ours.
Buddy.
Don't get all it twisted ours. There. All right. Thank you so much. We're going to go to the NFL right now, fellas. Yesterday, the New York Jets traded quarterback Sam Darnold to the Panthers in exchange for a sixth rounder in the 2021 draft and a second rounder and fourth rounder in 2022. The Panthers still have the number 8 pick in this year's NFL draft, which could still land them a rookie quarterback. We now welcome in Marcus Spears, who is all about Team Darnold in Carolina. He was all over over the internet, trending and such with that. You look so nice, Marcus.
He does look
I like
dapper
the look.
Today.
Thank you.
Suited and booted.
I must confess.
Okay,
he looks
dapper, I see
and
you.
The glasses
I appreciate
working
it. I appreciate it.
Wow. 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 Mm-hmm.
All right. But okay. I'm going
to
start with you, Stephen A. Is Darnold more likely to be an NFL starter or a backup, Stephen A?
Starter. He's 23 years old. He was contaminated by Adam Gase. Go back and look at the laundry list of individuals that departed from Adam Gase and ended up looking better. You know what I'm saying? There's a few of them out there. Okay, check out Stephen A's world this afternoon, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. I'll give you the list. I mean, he was playing for a coach that showed up high, and as far as I'm concerned, never stopped being and never stopped looking high, because that's how he looked on the sidelines as a coach of New York Jets, in completely over his head. Should have never had the damn job to begin with, and Sam Darnold has suffered because of it. Now that Sam Darnold is gone, I think Matt Rhule is proven to be a quality coach, and I think he's only going to get better on the NFL level. You're playing with Christian McCaffrey, who I think has suffered from affirmative action in reverse, for crying out loud, because if Christian McCaffrey were black, we would have been talking about him years ago, as opposed to him coming to the NFL and having to prove himself when the man ran for 2,000 yards at Stanford. Christian McCaffrey is a stud, a baller, okay? So you still got him. Robbie Anderson, you used to play with him in New York. Now you're with him in Carolina, okay? I think it's going to be a good situation for Sam Darnold. I have no doubt about it. I think ultimately he'll be a starter. At some point, we need to talk about Teddy Bridgewater, because it's not like he's a scrub, all right? It's not like he can't play. And so, you know, he's only got 1 year left on this deal, but they clearly, 15 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, they clearly look at him as relatively pedestrian at the quarterback position. He's an elite backup, an average starter. They clearly think more of Sam Darnold. Otherwise, they would not have made this deal to get him. He's only 23, and Mel Kiper Jr. said earlier today on Get Up, if Sam Darnold was in this year's NFL draft, he would be a top 3 overall pick. I think you take that into consideration. He's younger than Joe Burrow. The brother's got 3 years experience in the National Football League. Adam Gase won't be his coach. He's got a familiar wide receiver that he used to play with, and a stud in Christian McCaffrey, who only played 3 games last year, so he's going to be hungry this year. I think all those things considered, it's a winning situation for Sam Darnold, who, by the way, is in the same division as Matt Ryan, who's old, Drew Brees, who's gone, and obviously Tom Brady, who's about to leave in another year or two. I think it's a great situation for Sam Darnold, and I think the Carolina Panthers made the right decision, and they win this trade. He is a starter in this league, and I think he will be for years to come.
He might be, but if you're asking me more likely, I have to take backup. And the reason I have to take backup is because he's been in the league for 3 years, and he's been the dead last worst starter in the league all those years. In other words, if you weren't better than Sam Darnold, you were on the bench. Anyone worse than him wound up backing up. And in fact, some people better than him wound up backing up. He was dead last among starters. So he's only 23. He was in a bad situation. He has obvious talent. You can see he's mobile. He's tall enough. He has some leadership qualities. He has a good arm. He has arm talent. The whole thing. So, yeah, maybe in the right situation, maybe that's Joe Brady. He works. I mean, obviously, a lot of teams think highly of him, because when you look at the Panthers, they could have walked away, it looks like, with Justin Fields, right? According to most mock drafts, at least. You know, if it holds true to most mock drafts at this point, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and then if Mac Jones is actually the guy taken in San Francisco, I mean, you start looking at teams. Well, the Bengals don't need a quarterback, obviously, right? Who do the Falcons draft a quarterback? And then who would that be? Because you have Trey Lance and Justin Fields. Obviously, the Panthers looked at Darnold and thought, we think he's at least comparable to those guys, and we can use our high pick to go get another offensive player or go get some more help, whatever they want to do. I get all that, guys. Based on the evidence so far, a guy can look really good and you can write it off to circumstance, but I haven't seen where I would say it's a better than 50-50 bet that this dude is a long-term starter. Maybe he is. I wouldn't write him off. Obviously, the Panthers aren't writing him off. But based on what I've seen so far, I can't sit here and say that's better than a 50-50 shot.
Max, I would have agreed with you a year ago, but I saw what transpired in Cleveland.
this year. What a system, what surrounding and insulating a quarterback can actually make him look like. Like, let's be real, y'all. Baker Mayfield didn't have a groundbreaking year. It was nothing individually to look at Baker Mayfield's year and say, oh, he played out of his mind and he's become the top 10 or elite quarterback. But I saw what Kevin Stefanski could do with him, and we also saw the turnovers go down, which is one of the things about Sam Darnold. I liken this a lot to what Jameis Winston may have happened with him and Sean Payton. Look, to get to the answer, starter, Joe Brady, the maturation of Joe Burrow at LSU from 16 touchdowns to 50 the following year because of systems, using talent, being able to surround this kid. Look, man, we all know the situation Sam Darnold was in. We all talked about Kitchens with Baker Mayfield in over his head. We all talked about Hugh Jackson not managing that situation right and being out. And then we saw a competent offensive coach, a competent offensive coordinator, put him in a situation where Baker Mayfield could thrive and look really good at the quarterback spot. I believe the same thing for Sam Darnold. And Stephen A., you mentioned the guys with Adam Gase. Take Ryan Tannehill. Look at their QBR. Very similar. When Kenyon he was Drake. Under Adam Gase in Miami,
that's
was
right.
A little bit better. But you also think about what guys have shown us with a change of scenery and put in the right situation. Sam Darnold's arm talent is there. The physical ability, the ability to move, that athleticism we saw against the Denver Broncos. This dude is a starter in this league, and it's a damn shame what transpired with him and the New York Jets. And look, Joe Douglas, he has it all on the line because this is the draft where if he takes Zach Wilson and it works out, we'll love him forever as a general manager. If it doesn't and you end up back in the same situation and Sam Darnold goes with Matt Rhule and Joe Brady and has success, we all will see the question answered again. How much does systems matter and young quarterbacks being in the right situation? We saw it happen with Baker Mayfield. We saw it happen with Ryan Tannehill and Arthur Smith in Tennessee. I expect to see it happen with Sam Darnold and Joe Brady in Carolina.
Josh Allen.
Hey, guys, real quick question. Can y'all see me? Can y'all see me right now? Can y'all see me? I mean, Max, Marcus, who's this?
The guy that, hey, according.
I was trying to get that out of you in the first block of the show.
He an offensive guru.
That's the guy that inherits a 21-year-old Sam Darnold, and nobody understands why the brother had trouble over the last 2 years.
Man.
Only thing we can say about Darnold, Adam Gase, Darnold has it ain't more his upside. Fault that Sam Darnold came down with mono. That's about it. And we don't even know if that's true.
Yeah, we don't know if that's for sure. Look, Darnold has more upside than Bridgewater, right? He has a higher ceiling. He has bigger talent than Bridgewater. Bridgewater's a pretty good quarterback. Like, Darnold has yet to show in the pros that he can be as good as Bridgewater. Bridgewater, you know, has shown in the pros he can be a successful quarterback. So I hear what y'all are saying. That's conjecture. It's not based on nothing. It's based on his age, based on what he did in college, based on what his contemporaries did. We saw one of his contemporaries and one of the guys who got drafted when he got drafted in Josh Allen go to a situation and develop over the course of 3 years. Steadily, the arrow went up. We saw another dude, Baker Mayfield, 4 head coaches basically in 2 seasons, and he couldn't get anything done until he got the right guy and some stability, and then he made progress. Guys, that could easily happen for Sam Darnold. It doesn't have to happen
Max,
just because it happened for those other guys.
Max.
It doesn't have to. I mean, like, you,
Max,
like we, the book on him right now is not very good.
I hear what you're saying, and it's absolutely true. Like, based on the absolute facts of seeing Sam Darnold play, there's no reason to think he's going to be a starter. But also, all of those situations that you just mentioned with those quarterbacks, things changed around them. And coincidentally, they became better quarterbacks, or at least we look at them as different guys. Now, Josh Allen was in the MVP conversation after Brian Daboll came over and they went and got Stephon Diggs. So let's remember also while we talk about Sam Darnold in the context of how he struggled in New York, that's why we bring up what transpired in New York. And then all of these other situations lend themselves to us believing that a better situation with competent coaching will change who Sam Darnold is as a quarterback. And all of his skill set and talent leads us to believe that he's a starter in this league.
Could have had Justin Fields
all
on
right,
a rookie
let's
deal.
Let's leave it there. Another story I want to get to, guys. Let's go to Chicago. We haven't talked about the Bears in a while. So Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy ended quite a bit of suspense about his offense last week, announcing that Andy Dalton will start at quarterback and also that he will call the team's offensive plays again in 2021. Nagy has taken the Bears to the playoffs twice in his 3 years as head coach. But Stephen A., does he still deserve to be the head coach of Chicago?
Hell no. No. First of all, let's you know, numbers sometimes do lie. Like the first year they 12-4, but they got bounced out in the postseason by the Philadelphia Eagles. Their defense was, they were monsters. But again, it's problems at the quarterback position. Okay, fair enough. Last 2 years, he was 8-8. Both years, 8-8. He has something to do, him and Ryan Pace. I think they both need to be gone. How do you move up in the draft to draft Mitchell Trubisky and bypassing Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, and then now Mitchell Trubisky's a Buffalo Bill? I mean, that's a fireable offense in and of itself. Correct me if I'm wrong, Marcus Spears. You move up. You got the number 2 overall pick in the draft. You pass up Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, and you moved up to bypass them to get Mitchell Trubisky, who you now have let him go. You don't want him no more. So he ends up signing as a backup with the Buffalo Bills. If that ain't an egregious offense by a GM and a head coach, I don't know what is. You got Khalil Mack and Jackson and the crew there on the defense, monsters of the midway. They living up to their end of the bargain. They have no help. You sign Nick Foles. That doesn't seem to work out for you as well. So the bottom line is this. You Matt Nagy, these are supposed to be problems you were supposed to solve. The fact that you didn't, somebody needs to be held accountable for it. Clearly the players were. They ain't there no more. Why the hell you still there? Yeah, I think they should go. Him and Ryan Pace.
No, I don't agree about Matt Nagy. Look, we saw games last season where afterwards we're scratching our heads about the coach. There's no doubt about that. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that's not the case. Fact of the matter is the Bears have never drafted a real and developed a real quarterback ever. Ever. In my lifetime, I'm 47 years old. So the fact that they haven't done that is on the GMs. That's on the franchise. Before I look at the coach, you didn't have a quarterback. You didn't have an offensive line. That's not on the coach to me. It may be Nagy's got to go, but I think Ryan Pace is on the firing line first. And if you need to, like, I'm not convinced Nagy can't coach. I'm convinced that the Bears need to do a better job getting a quarterback and protecting him. Because here we walk into another season, and they're trying to sell Andy Dalton this time to the fan base. Come on.
Max, I'm with you. Stephen A., I disagree. I don't look, Matt Nagy being 28-20 above 500 with everything that's transpired. Now, what I will say is, if I knew how involved he was in beating the table to go up and get Mitchell Trubisky and it worked out like this, I'd say he needs to be gone. But if that was Ryan Pace, I think Ryan Pace is the guy under fire. 12-4, 8-8, shouldn't subject you to being fired after your 3 years as a head coach. But the bottom line is Matt Nagy with Andy Dalton is going to have to win some games. If not, he's going to be looking for a job, and it don't matter what we say on First Take.
Y'all stay excited about Matt Nagy. Go ahead. Bravo. Bravo.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.